702 Motoring.
It's 25 minutes to 3 o'clock, and thank you for the feedback on the chat with Somizi. Constance in Bassonia says, wow, thanks for a great show. I read the story in the Saturday Star. I was impressed, really. I also remember him on TV shows years ago. You should be very proud. The way you love your mom, and I also saw your daughter on magazines. Well done. That comes from Constance. And then Tubby says, Somizi for president. Msholozi must go back to Nkandla and enjoy his grandkids. Are we ready for that? That's the thing. The state of the nation would be on another level. And then someone wanted to know about where he gets all that energy from. I guess it's just being positive and just always living with gratitude. I think that's a big part of it. And having gone to the lows, then he writes about it, you know, how people were not there, how he lost all the work that had been there, that had sustained him. And it's heartbreaking to read that. Even his bank account, bank balance, being in the negative, people taking cars and so on. And look at what he's managed to rebuild, what he's managed to do. So it's a fantastic story. And as he says, that he tried to give as much of the details that he recalled as possible. Let's talk motoring now. This motoring conversation is brought to you by Audi Freeway Plan Extension. We're with Nicole Lowe this afternoon, the technical editor of Car Magazine. And this is where we get to take your calls on 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs. And if you have a technical problem, technical question with your car, now's your opportunity to raise it with Nicole. Good afternoon. How are you doing, Nicole?
Hi, Zanya. Our listeners, I'm doing very well, thank you.
Great. So we are taking calls this afternoon any technical problems. But let's start off with looking at how engine power is measured. How is it measured? And do you find that manufacturers give us the real information? Do they overstate, overquote, or understate engine power?
Interesting question, Azania, and it's a similar question I received on email, which is covered in the latest Car Magazine by Neville Jacobs. And he asked the same question. Quite interesting, it did happen before in the late 1980s to early 2000s. The most famous example is the Nissan GT-R that comes from Japan. And they had a gentleman's agreement at the time which stated that no car should produce more than 280 horsepower, whereas the GT-Rs all claimed to produce 274 horsepower, 276 horsepower, which is just over 200 kilowatts, 206 kilowatts. But when the guys started testing these cars, they actually produced a lot more power, something like 320 horsepower or 239 kilowatts. So they were producing a lot more power than stated by the manufacturer. It's completely changed today where, first of all, the engine power that you will see on the websites of manufacturers or even the back of Car Magazine next to the car you're going to buy, those figures are tested on an engine dynamometer. So it's an engine by itself connected to what we call a dynamometer or a brake that's able to then measure the torque output and power output of that engine under controlled circumstances. So our controlled atmospheric conditions, which normally would be sea level, 20 degrees Celsius. And yes, it's also very repeatable. And for manufacturers to claim a certain power figure, it needs to be verified by the authorities. So in Europe, in America, the different authorities will come and do witness testing. So the guy in the white lab coat will be there with his clipboard. And also the tolerance band of these power figures are very small. So we're talking about sometimes even like a 1% tolerance band, because we know all engines aren't the same. But if you state a certain power figure, that engine should produce within a very small tolerance band that power figure. And then it can sort of claim that power figure, and that's the figure that will be published out there. So I think today, if you look at power figures that's claimed by manufacturers, you can sort of trust those power figures. If there's legislation around those power figures, and we've known from, I mean, we've seen what happened with the VW emission scandal. If manufacturers start lying to the public, it leaves a bad taste, and it can do more harm than good. So there's no point of manufacturers claiming over or under power figures. Just one thing, the guys that out there that tune their cars and take it to a dyno, those are rolling road dynos, which is a bit different to an engine dyno. Obviously, there's, if you think about the power figure that's published, that's the power at the crankshaft. The power at the wheels of a car is a lot less. There's a lot of losses through the powertrain as the power goes to the wheels. So you talk about a rear-wheel drive car, you can lose up to 20% in power from that claimed figure on the wheels itself. And front-wheel drive, maybe 10 to 15% less on the wheels. And also on a rolling dyno, it's a dynamic event. You can't keep the engine at a constant speed for a long time. It's obviously heating and cooling and all those kind of issues. So the rolling road dyno is by far not a scientific measuring device as the engine dyno that the manufacturers use. So it's nice for just quickly seeing if your car makes more power or not, but it's not as scientific as an engine dyno as that they use for these power figures that gets publicized.
Right. Nicole, let's take a break and then we'll go to the lines. We've set the scene for you. We are talking cars with Nicole Lowe, and we are dealing with technical issues that you might have. Maybe you're hearing a sound, or you're seeing smoke, or there's a puddle, or we've come across all sorts of technical questions, and you can give us a call on 011-883-0702 and 31702 for your SMSs.
702 Motoring.
It's 17 minutes to 3, and let's cover as many of your calls in the time remaining as possible. My guest is Nicole Lowe, the technical editor of Car Magazine. Owen, we start with you. You have a question about the VW Caravelle?
Yes, I do. Good afternoon. I just want to find out the Caravelle, obviously it's a 2004 model, got 120,000 on it. What's your take on the Caravelle? Are they very reliable vehicles? The VW?
Are we talking about the 2-liter diesel version?
The 2.5 diesel.
Yes. I haven't heard anything bad from that vehicle. 120,000 kilometers sounds quite low for the year, so it hasn't been driven a lot. I always say
it's got full records, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, so that's what I wanted to say. If you go for a second-hand car, make sure it's got a full service history. I prefer to buy a car privately sometimes to meet the owner as well, because I think the owner tells you a lot about the car. If you see the dealership and it's polished up and all that, you never know what the history of the car has been. So, I haven't heard anything bad from that specific engine or car. So, just make sure you have got some extra money if there's some maintenance needed on the vehicle. But, if it's fully serviced and it looks good and it drives good, there's no vibrations, no rattles, no excessive smoke, I think it should be fine.
Right.
He let me use it for the weekend and to test it, and it was a caravan with it, and a beautiful vehicle. So I just wanted to know what it looks like,
Nice.
Right. Yeah, I must say I've been driving as a long term test vehicle the latest Caravelle, which is now ridiculously expensive, close to R1 million. But as a family vehicle, a combi, it's in history. I think it's as native to South Africa as Braaivleis and Veldtskoene. And I think if you experience a Caravelle with all the interior space, especially for family use, that's one of the best cars out there.
Owen, thank you for your call. Next, we go to Stefan in Pretoria. Hello, Stefan.
Hi, Zania. Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
I drive the Mercedes-Benz A250 2014 model, and since mid last year until now, the hold function, when I stop at a red light, the car doesn't switch off anymore. It's just making me worry that something might be technically wrong.
You mean that stop-start function when you say it doesn't switch off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the stop-start, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nicole?
Okay, all right. The stop-start function in a car needs quite a few entry conditions to be met before the engine will actually switch off. The garage can actually check that for you to see if all these entry conditions are met. But I can presume it wouldn't switch off, for instance, if the cabin needs a lot of cooling. So if your aircon is running at full tilt to trying to cool the cabin, there's no point of the engine switching off and your cabin cooling is then disappearing. So now that it's getting to summertime, maybe your cabin needs more cooling and therefore the engine is idling a lot more than it would have, for instance, in the winter time. But on many of these cars with a stop-start function, first you have to be stationary. If it's a manual vehicle, you have to be in neutral, clutch out, that kind of thing. An automatic vehicle, obviously, that doesn't apply. And as I said, the charge in the battery, if the battery is running low on charge, you wouldn't switch off the engine because it needs to start it again. So there's quite a few conditions that needs to be met before the engine will switch off. So if you're really worried and you think that it should have switched off by now, or you don't experience that action anymore, then take it to the dealership. They can plug in their tool, mm-hmm. and they can check all these entry conditions to see which one isn't met. Maybe there's a sensor that's playing up somewhere. As I mentioned, something like your aircon system running to keep you cool, that will prevent the engine from switching off if there's a big difference, if it's still trying to cool you when you're parked.
All right, we've lost Stefan, but I hope that helps. Let's go to Ted next. Good afternoon, Ted.
Hello, Sonia. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2008 Golf 5 GTR with the BWA spec.
Yeah.
It's a super little car. I use it, you know, around town mainly. The only issue is it has quite a noisy, the engine's quite noisy at idle. It's almost, and I've heard other people complain about this condition, almost sounds like a diesel at idle. Oh. I've heard people express opinions about what it is like a noisy injector, because it has a direct injector engine.
Mm.
But do you have any opinions on this, Nicole?
All right. So the GTI Golf 5 2008, you say, Nicole?
Yeah. What is the mileage of the vehicle currently?
150,000.
Yeah, I mean, if the sound that you hear from the engine, if you had it for a couple of years and it was quiet to start off with and it's now noisy, then I'll be slightly concerned. A direct injection engine, if you think about a diesel engine, that's always been mostly direct injection and obviously a different combustion process, but that gives you the loud noise in a diesel engine. Now, with the early direct injection petrol engines, you could also hear that it was a bit noisy at idle, but as I would say, if you almost compare it to a similar vehicle of a similar year model and similar mileage and it sounds the same, then I wouldn't be worried. And also, if it hasn't changed over the last years, I wouldn't be more worried. I'd be more worried if it's a mechanical noise, something on the valve train that maybe there's tolerance in there. Or I think with that engine, you've actually got a timing belt and a timing chain, if I remember correctly. Maybe that chain is wearing out, but you wouldn't expect a lot of wear at 150,000 kilometers. That should still be okay. So I'm just concerned if it's a mechanical noise hearing. If it's a normal combustion noise resulting from the direct injection, that's no problem.
All right.
It is. No, look, it is a mechanical noise. I've heard other people, you know, if you Google it, other people have the same sort of issue, and you know, there's just variable opinions. I guess I was asking whether you knew specifically about this one. You know?
I don't specifically. I would advise you, especially because it's a Golf GTR and there's so many of these VW specialist service centers out there, people that only specialize in VWs that are outside warranty. If you go and talk to them, they might have a better idea, because they sell so many GTIs, there's so many on the road. If there's a common issue plaguing some of them, they would know about it for sure. I haven't heard anything specific on this issue.
Right. Samuel, you're next. You're calling from Randfontein. You have a question about keys.
Yes, basically I'm driving a 2014 BMW F30.
Okay.
So I just wanted to find out if the car keys, if they can be cloned, because... You know what, I've been hijacked recently and then my car was discovered after a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And then now when I took it to BMW, they actually terminated my motor plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now I was a victim of a crime and they terminated my motor plan. But the reason behind is that they suspect that the keys could have been cloned. I don't know if that is possible. I'm not happy with that. I took the matter with ombudsman, but the ombudsman kept it to that, to say, well, the BMW says your computer box could have been tampered with. But I've never seen an evaluation report to indicate that my computer box has been tampered with. But then it's something that they suspected. Now I took the matter to National Consumer Commission, because I'm not happy with how it was handled. But now my biggest question is that, is it possible that the keys can be cloned? Because I've got the spare key still functioning, they're identical, and then they're still functioning properly. So I'm worried if ever it's actually a fact that my keys could have been tampered with.
All right.
Or it's cloned, Nicole? Or something else.
Yeah.
Have you heard of such?
The short answer is a key can be cloned, but it's very difficult to do, especially on a late model vehicle. They've got a lot of security systems in place to prevent that. So obviously there's a chip in the key itself, and then there's also a code in the ECU, and these have to communicate to each other. So what I've seen is that if you lose your key and you want a new key and you go to a BMW dealership, they'll say, I can give you a VIN number and they can order you a key, and it can cost you a lot of money. We're talking about $5,000, $8,000 or even more for a key. But if you go to a specialist locksmith that deals with automotive keys, they've got all their machines to be able to plug into your car, read the ECU codes, and then also transfer the code to the dummy or the new key onto that chip. So they can actually do the cloning process, but it takes quite a bit of time to do that. And these people that can do this, they're all certified to be able to do it. They need all the certifications, because obviously it is a safety risk if there's people out there that with this capability.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, it normally happens. It can only happen like in their shop. They have all the tools plugged in. It does take some time. So it's not like somebody can swipe your key off the table, put it on the machine, and then whoops, they've got a new key and they can go and start your vehicle. It's not as easy as that. So they would need access to your vehicle for at least, I would say, half an hour or more, and they would need all the diagnostic and all those equipment, which is quite heavy to carry around, to be able to clone a key. In the good old days, obviously, you can just cut the manual key and there you go, but now they've all chips, so they all communicate with the ECU and back. So the short answer is a key can be cloned, but it's a very difficult process. You need the right equipment, you need a bit of time, and you need full access to the vehicle and the keys. You can, with a key, normally when you buy a car, you get two or three keys, maybe two keys. ECU would normally allow you to add a third and a fourth key, maybe, if you want to. So that is all possible. But as I say, it's a tricky process.
Right. Samuel, here's your answer.
Okay, that's okay. It's just that, I just feel it's unfair that, I mean, now I lost the motor plan, they say, because of the risk behind that. And I was just a victim of crime now. And then now I've just been for a motor plan that I don't even get.
Last comment with me, maybe go and speak to one of these automotive locksmiths, but the high-tech guys, and they would be able to tell you exactly what needs to be done to clone a key and how difficult it is and how much time you need and if it's possible. And they would probably be able to give you a written proof or either way what is possible and what is not, and maybe that can help you in your case.
Yeah. Thank you for your call, Samuel. A difficult one indeed. Tabang in Soweto, you say you have a Sonata Hyundai?
Hi, Sonata. Yeah, I have a Sonata. It's 288,998
Ks. Mm-hmm.
So the problem I have is there's this rattling, and it sounds like it's coming from the engine. So I don't know what could be wrong. Yeah.
So just when you're driving, any time while you're driving?
So yeah, it started about 2 weeks ago. Like when I started the car. Yeah, and then it starts rattling. And when I drive it, and maybe it's going up the steep, it sounds like there's something being cut.
Okay. Nicole, any thoughts?
Yeah, it's very difficult, obviously, to comment on the sound that we can't hear ourselves. First of all, I mean, it is quite a high mileage vehicle, and I hope it's been fully serviced all the time. So that's the first thing to check. But a rattling noise on the engine, does it happen on power, or can you actually, if it idles in your driveway, for instance, can you hear the rattle then as well, or only while driving?
Oh, we've lost him, Nicole, sadly.
Okay. So, I mean, what I would have told the caller here is that if you can hear the noise, or you can replicate the noise while stationary, that's obviously the best way to go to try and figure out. It might be that something is just loose under the bonnet, that it's really something that's just loose or rattling. I mean, worst case scenario, it's a mechanical noise coming from inside the engine, which would need further investigation. But first of all, try to replicate the sound while stationary. Search for the sound. If you're not technically minded yourself, get a friend to have a look under the bonnet while you replicate the sound, and if not, then obviously next step is the service center or technician to try and figure this out. But yes, it might be something stupid like a loose bracket under the bonnet or exhaust pipe touching somewhere or something like that, or it can be something more serious, but it's difficult to comment from here.
Absolutely, and we know this every time the sound questions come up, that it's very difficult to pinpoint to what could be causing it. Thank you so much, Nicole.
Thanks, Azania.
That's our Nicole Lowe, the technical editor for Car Magazine. On Tuesdays, we talk motoring with either Nicole or our Jacob Moshoko.